This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up. But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Got to be a badass if you walk out to Iron Man. Only one man I know can get that done. It's our friend Mr. Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post. Everybody's analytics man. Hello, Greenberg. We saw a not score reflective thumping last night. What did you make of Caps Canes game one?
Well, Carolina's doing what it's done pretty much for the whole year, which was control the offensive zone when they're in it. They pepper a lot of shots on net. They're a very analytically driven organization. I've known their GM, Eric Tulsky, since he was a blogger in his mom's basement for over a decade now. You know, this is a team that is going to take advantage of their roster. It's going to take advantage of their line matchups, and it's going to tilt the ice in their favor. And we saw that last night starting in the first period, even though, you know, there were no goals scored. Washington was still outshot 12-5. I think that this is a tough matchup for Washington because this is a team that just loves to dominate the puck in the offensive zone.
Them, like you said, they pepper the net. That's all by plan, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, their whole thing is to – their roster's built to take advantage of the times when they have to puck. They're very good at controlling the entry across the blue line. They're very good at getting it to their players in the right spots. And they led the league in offensive zone time this season. They're really good in the high danger areas, both on the power play and during even strength. And I think we saw last night their penalty kill is really good. So I think this is just a well-rounded team. And I know a lot of people were wondering why Carolina was favored in this matchup. Well, you know, this is why. I mean, they're not like a huge favorite. It was like a 55-45 split, mm-hmm. But you know, you can see that they are a really good hockey team that needs to be taken seriously.
Clearly, they're a good team, and mm-hmm. I think we all kind of knew that just from the regular season games. You know, technically they split. One of the Caps wins was a shootout win, but it was also kind of clear. I mean, that five. There's a million factors because the Caps played Carolina twice off back-to-backs and it wasn't always LT in goal. But Greenberg, recognizing Carolina's good and the kind of the contrast of styles might be difficult for Washington, I also think the Caps just played bad and could be way better. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, look, we're in the playoffs. You need to have your best games. I mean, you're not playing the Bostons and Chicagos of the world anymore. You're playing really good teams. You're playing cup caliber teams in the second round, and you absolutely need to minimize the mistakes. Washington's a really good team. And this isn't to say that they can't win this series, but, you know, I thought that the 2-1 score really wasn't reflective. This could have easily been like 4-1, right? I mean, this is, something that Washington is going to need to correct and make sure that they're much tighter defensively. Because, as I said, I mean, Carolina will make you pay if you let them keep the puck in the offensive zone for a long period of time.
I tend to agree with what you're saying right there, because I believe if Logan Thompson wasn't in net, they have 4 or 5 goals.
8-1.
He was unbelievable early on. And you watch them, their goalie's sitting there and not being stressed at all. And I've always felt that the team playing better, you know, defensively can help out the goalie. And they have to get better.
Yeah, absolutely. This is an interesting situation. The expected goals, so based on the shots that were taken, where they were taken, whether or not they were on the power play or at even strength, et cetera, score should have been like 4-2, maybe 5-3. Carolina didn't score as much as they probably should. And if you play that game again, you know, they're going to have a hard time. But even if you look at just like the scoring chances, I mean, Carolina was all over the place on the, front in the net. And, you know, Logan Thomas absolutely needed, you know, every ounce of those 30 some odd saves. But again, I mean, Washington's also got to make sure that their chances count as well. Cause I don't think, you know, there's not going to be too many of these 2-1 games. I think Carolina's going to start running up the score a little bit.
Yeah, man. Talking with our friend Neil Greenberg here from the Washington Post. You can give him a follow at N Greenberg on Twitter and Instagram. Greenberg joins us from the Rood guest hotline. Rood makes the most reliable HVAC products in the DMV. I don't want to sound like monotone on this. Do you feel like the Caps can turn this thing around?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. I mean, they're a very good coach team. They have a lot of good players, starting with Alex Ovechkin on down. The Caps can score in bunches too. I mean, if game two is, 7-2 in Washington's favor, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, that's really out of the ordinary. I mean, this is what this team is capable of. They lose in overtime, which is tough, but you know, it wasn't like they got blown out. They did get blown out in some of the underlying metrics. But, look, Carberry's a good coach. He's going to see what's going on. He's going to make adjustments. Both coaches are going to make adjustments. He's got, you know, he's going to be home again, so he gets the benefit of last change to put his players in the best possible position to succeed. So I think it's going to be fine. I wouldn't sound any alarm bells yet. I will say the team that wins the first game in the 7-game series wins about 68% of the time, so it's definitely not, you know, the best possible spot. But, you know, as I said, Washington's a well-coached team, a lot of players that can do the right things. There's no reason to panic yet. They weren't going to sweep them.
In other sports, we look at the referees, we know the crews. I don't know all the referees in hockey. But I know that those referees missed a lot of damn calls against Carolina last night.
They do. It's a very fast sport. But there's a lot of calls that are missed.
Last night, it was like 3 or 4 trips. Carolina, yeah, Washington, and, also, and they called none of them.
And there's some analytics stuff out there that shows that the referees try to even out the power plays. And they do have a bias in that sense. You're going to find you'll be able to find fault with with the referees. I will tell you one thing.
Yeah, number 74 last night. I wanted to jump across the glass and whoop his ass.
Well, I would almost guarantee our pal Alan May was right there with you, because he is a big proponent of referee. Slander. Not slander. Maybe just
referee screwing the game
criticism.
Up.
So he, constructive
I got to, yeah, yeah, yeah. Just let him know.
Yeah.
I got to watch the first period with Allen. Well, like, kind of Allen adjacent. Like, he was there and I was there, but he didn't care that I was there, if that makes sense. He was very, very
I've been
much
there, yeah.
In.
I've done some shows with him. He's definitely watching a different game in his own spot.
Right. Now, I was also with Brent Johnson, and Johnny and I were talking throughout. Allen very locked in. Not pleased. He was not
yeah,
a pleased
no,
person.
I heard it from here. Yeah, I've done those. Brent's a chatter, and then he'll chat with Allen about stuff that I never saw because they watch a different game.
We're not privy to that.
And then a lot of yelling from Allen, who I love, by the way.
Yeah, that's my dog right there.
Yeah, Mayday's good people. I think it's going to be quite interesting going forward with this thing. I did think. And I asked Wilson about this afterwards in the dressing room, and he took the high road, I think probably because he doesn't want to get fined. I did think the call in the third period to give Carolina a power play that they ended up not scoring on was pretty weak. I think the dude just dropped a stick to make it look like a way worse slash.
The high stick?
Yeah. What was the power play in the third period?
That was on Ovi, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Oh, the slashing.
I'm talking about the slashing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what they call early in the third period, yeah.
Early in the period, yeah. I thought that.
I think that was straight stankola BS.
Well, you weren't alone, I'm sure.
Yeah. Give me one key. This is perhaps stupid and an oversimplification, Greenberg. But I thought when Ovi scored early in game five, it just set the tone for the Caps to kind of run away with that thing and feel comfortable. And when they got nothing on that early power play, I know they got the one look, but they just – I feel like they got to – especially now down 0-1 with a, like at home, they need early success against this Hurricanes team on Thursday night.
Yeah, I mean they need to get that they need to get that top line going for sure. And, you know, when you're looking at what Carolina likes to do, spend a lot of time in the offensive zone, you know, if you have a one or two goal lead, you're able to play a little bit tighter defensively and just do a little bit more to pressure the puck because you have that cushion. You know, you take that away and Carolina becomes kind of like a freewheeling skating team. It makes it much more difficult. So, you know, absolutely. And this is across all the NHL, right? The team that score first generally is in a much better position because it does change the complexity of the game in terms of how you're deploying players and how you're deploying them on the ice.
When you look at the game last night, I think three early, two Tom Wilson just lost the puck. And then Leonard, later, he had a breakaway, and he never got a shot off without anybody really in his way.
Yeah, you need – look, we've said this before, right, and it's a cliche, but it's a cliche because it's true. Like, you need your best players to be your best players, especially in the playoffs, because the room for error is so much smaller. Mm-hmm. They're going to need their big guys to – we're going to have to be talking a lot about – you know, Ovechkin and Strom and Protas and Wilson and McMichael, like, to the good stuff, right? Because that's really what they need to come out for, like, a 5-1 victory and everyone can kind of breathe a sigh of relief and not be so worried.
Talking with our friend Neil Greenberg here from the Washington Post, I am going to perhaps jam in a little bit of football conversation here. I follow you on Twitter. I always find it interesting. At N Greenberg, and Greenberg joins us via the Rude guest hotline. If it ain't rude, it ain't right. Speaking of not being right, the Steelers are really good at drafting wide receivers that perform well in Pittsburgh and not other places. you put this chart together, and I'm going to ask your permission now if I can screenshot that and tweet it out, and I will credit you. I think that would be better than me retweeting it. I think that'll get more eyeballs on it. But basically, you looked at the success rate for a lot of Steelers receivers that then went elsewhere, and it's overwhelmingly bad when they go elsewhere. 3 out of 5, quite bad. And you didn't even include Antonio Brown, which what would be like its own subcategory. I ask that by saying, what do you make of this George Pickens trade?
Yeah, I think that it's an interesting one. I think this is caveat emptor. You know, it reminds me of when Philadelphia traded their franchise quarterback Donovan McNabb to an in-division rival, and it's like, okay, like what? You know, this never happens. Like, why are you doing this? Like, what's the real story? That ended up not working out, and we've seen kind of the same situation. I mean, it's you know, give credit to Mike Tomlin for being able to put people in the right position to succeed, and also knowing when to cut bait. And you know, we've seen, you know, whenever you've seen this type of trend in the past, you at least have to take, you know, a moment and say, okay, like what is there, you know, there's got to be something wrong, right? Because you don't, the NFL's whole purpose is to accumulate good talent, right? Not get rid of good talent.
Yep.
So the fact that they're letting him go is, says a lot. I think it's interesting for Dallas. I mean, CeeDee Lamb and George Pickens is a pretty good duo to have. And I'm not really sure what the Steelers are doing now. But I don't think it's going to make a difference. I don't think Dallas is going to be competitive in the division. I think it's clearly Philadelphia 1, Washington 2. You know, I think this is more of like a Jerry Jones move, like, look at me, I'm making stuff happen, than it is improving the football team move.
I basically said it's what Washington used to do.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
We've changed, and I'm like, you know what? Let them have that.
Right. Yeah, right. You want to take the chance. Everyone thinks that they can change them, right? Everyone thinks that they can fix the player that's probably broken. If Jerry Jones wants to do it, you know, no one's going to stop him because that's his decision. But, again, I think this is more a – maybe ego is not the right word, but more of a ego trade than it is an actual improve the football team trade.
I tend to agree with you. Now, I'm going to ask one other question that might have me a little bit nervous.
Oh, boy.
If a road team wins game one in the Stanley Cup playoffs, what is the percentage they win the series?
It's probably pretty good. I know it's 68% overall, so it's got to be at least close to that. You know, it's going to be pretty large.
You don't need to hear anything else if it's 68%.
Yeah, but it's 68%, and a lot of that is probably home teams.
That's home team?
No,
that's
well,
all
the team,
teams.
Yeah, the team that wins. Yeah, so it's going to be probably much higher. Let me see if I can find it real quick.
Let's see.
We have it here. NHL. No, I can't find it anywhere.
Whatever. You can find it on your own.
Here it is. So it's 60%.
Oh, it went down.
All right.
So yeah, that 60%
doesn't change everything.
To do it. So they were 55% before. Again, you know, we weren't going to see a sweep in all likelihood. So, you know, they took the first one on the road. They weren't going to be swept. You know, it probably is going to be a little bit of a series. I wouldn't panic just yet.
Okay, good. Last, and this can be super quick. The Pacers are up 2-0 on Cleveland. You think they knocked them
surprise.
Out?
Surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the road teams in general are doing well. They all won last night, I think, for the first time. Or they all won in this round so far. And against the spread, they're like on a 9-1 streak. I think that this is, you know, this is what the NBA wanted. I mean, in terms of parity, I mean, the good teams are good, and you know, these records that we see are largely because you have the Utahs and Washingtons in the mix. You know, you take those out, and you're looking at just, you know, the top couple teams in the NBA. They're probably a lot closer than their record suggests. Am I surprised? Yeah. But, you know, I think this is the NBA is a different type of environment now, which allows a team like Indianapolis to make some hay.
Well, I mean, it's injuries on Cleveland as well. That you know, I don't think Mitch
can do it by himself.
Yeah.
All right. Absolutely. Greenberg, we got to run, brother. We got a hard out with this Nats game coming. Thank you, buddy.
Love you. Talk to you soon.
All right, brother. Take care.
That's our guy, Neil Greenberg from the Washington Post. Give him a follow, at NGreenberg. B. Mitchell Finley, 106.7 The Fan. Plenty for us to discuss in, 25 minutes or so. We're going to talk some Eagles. We're going to do an NFC East review this week, starting with Philly. We're moving in geographic proximity. I also think there's a lot to discuss from the weekend. My six-year-old won a championship, Brian. Bang. My nine-year-old did not.
And what, golf?
Lacrosse.
Or lacrosse. Right.
Yeah, man. We celebrated by going to McDonald's. Landville, I think you'd be interested to know. I don't know how new this is, but it's new to me.
Are you going to tell me they have chicken strips?
That was the big push, because obviously they're pushing their new chicken strips, which are McCrispy chicken strips, I suppose, McCrispy strips.
Mm-hmm.
I, however, got a McCrispy sandwich, which appears to be McDonald's version of the Chick-fil-A sandwich. Here's my review, Landville. It was pretty good. Is that okay? Did I give you enough info?
That's cool.
So that my Sunday was all kids lacrosse and McDonald's until I told my wife, I was like, listen, I'm going to watch sports tonight. Like, there are sports I am watching. There are a pair of game sevens. And B, I'll be honest, the hockey game started 2-0 St. Louis, and it looked like they were going to run away with it, and I was way more excited for the basketball game for Rockets-Warriors. And then Winnipeg slowly comes back, and Rockets-Warriors slowly turns into not quite a blowout, but never really that interesting. And
that run at the end was special.
Sure, and Buddy Hield was just on fire. Like, yeah. I had both on, but did you watch any of the hockey?
No.
B, it was 3-1 St. Louis with, like, I want to say under 10 minutes left. And then, and this is in Winnipeg. This is Winnipeg as the one seed, the President's Trophy winner. Winnipeg scores to make it 3-2. Then it looks like they score to make it 3-3, and it gets called back because the puck didn't go completely over the line. They legitimately scored with 1.6 seconds left to send it into overtime.
Damn.
And then it went into double O. You know how hockey overtime in the playoffs is just like, it's like a drug. Like, you can't stop watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just so intense. And then Winnipeg scored to go ahead in the second overtime. I kind of thought it was going to go to three. The way it was going, dude, it just seemed like it would never end. So now the entire second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs is set. Jets, Stars, I was rooting for the Avalanche. Knights, Oilers, I'm definitely rooting for Edmonton. Toronto, Florida, and then Caps, Canes. Winner of Caps, Canes gets the winner of the Leafs and the Panthers. Do you have a dog in that fight, Brian? Is there somebody you'd prefer the Caps to play?
No. My mindset has always been the same. To be the best, you got to beat the best. So whoever comes, come.
I mean, Panthers are defending champs.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think, I imagine, White Brian, give me the odds on Panthers, Leafs. I imagine the Panthers are pretty big favorites in that. NBA playoffs are now set.
That's where Kachuk is?
There's a Kachuk in Florida. There's a Kachuk in Ottawa.
Yeah, Matt is in Florida, right?
Yeah. How about Pacers beating Cleveland yesterday?
Yeah.
I throughout the season, we've been like, I don't know if Cleveland's for real. What happens in the NBA, you saw this when Thibodeau was coaching the Bulls. Certainly this Cleveland team, they have some talent. But when you have an NBA team that commits to playing defense and playing hard all the time throughout the regular season, you can get a really good record without necessarily being that good. Yeah. If you commit to going 100% all the time.
I think they're good, though, man. I think they're good. They just ran into Indiana, played better defense. And Jeff's buddy, Al Halliburton, was balling.
We got to give you credit, Jeffrey. You were an early adopter on Halliburton. Dude is good. Even if his dad's kind of an ass clown, dude is good. So Indiana is up 1-0 on Cleveland. The other series, does that start tonight, Knicks Celtics? I believe that's tonight.
I think it starts.
Yes. Yeah.
So that's tonight at 7, which honestly just kind of the Boston-New Yorkness of it makes it more fun.
Yep.
Does anybody think the Knicks will win that series?
No.
No. But
they're favored by 9.5 in the first game.
Damn. Out West.
Hell, the Thunder's favored by 9.5, too, over the Thunder, over the Nuggets.
Out West is pretty loaded and star-studded. Thunder Nuggets starts tonight at 9:30. The question there is not talent, right? Like, the Thunder's pretty loaded, but they haven't done this yet. And so now you got to beat a previous champ.
But I think they have, this year they seem to be playing with a little bit more, because like last year they were very good, but no experience.
Right.
This year they seem to have a little bit more with them.
I mean, they thumped the Grizzlies.
Beat team by 51 and 55, I think it was, something like that.
Circling back, the Panthers are significant favorites over the Leafs. It's almost 2-1 or 1-2, I guess. -175 if you want to bet Florida to win. So Thunder Nuggets starts tonight. So your two games tonight in hoops, Celtics Knicks at 7, Thunder Nuggets at 9:30, and then I mean, this series is probably the one I'm most excited for, B, is Timberwolves-Warriors. That starts tomorrow. You know, the T-Wolves have had some real rest. Golden State has the older roster in this thing. They get one day off before they're on. How do they get they're on the road in Minnesota tomorrow night at 9:30? This is the time of year it gets real hard to go to bed because you want to watch these games.
Hey, you got to do it. Gotta sacrifice, baby.
And for the folks that don't have multiple TV setups, in the year 2025 of our Lord, where you could buy a TV for like $75, you got it. Yeah, all you have to do is connect it to your internet. You got to step your game up, people. I don't want to be rude, but.
Well, you are being rude, Jay.
I don't think so. I said it politely. I said our Lord. Tonight, puck, just the one game, Panthers Leafs in Toronto. That arena will be buzzing. That's at 8 o'clock. Obviously, the big news of the day here in Washington, though, I think, is the announcement of the NFL draft coming.
Yeah.
And, Brian, some of our friends in Philadelphia have an idea.
What's the idea?
So, I follow this Philly sports blog called Crossing Broad. And if you're familiar with Philadelphia, Broad Street is this giant street in Philadelphia. So Crossing Broad is the idea of crossing Broad Street.
Mm-hmm.
And they are hardcore Philly homers, but they make me laugh. Like, it's well written. It's well done. So I'm going to read to you from this blog post I just saw from Crossing Broad, who I believe their publisher is Kevin Kincaid. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
The 2027 NFL draft will be held in Washington, according to every insider on the planet. We're just awaiting official word from the league. The draft was held in New York every year from 1965 to 2014. Then they got wise and took the show back on the road, doing a couple of years to Chicago before bringing it to Philly, Arlington, and Nashville. Next year, they'll be in Yinzerville, and then it goes to the Swamp down in D.C., where all of the corrupt career politicians and slimeball Capitals fans live. Gross. That being said, it's not too early to start planning a Philadelphia Eagles fan takeover. Yo, and they did our boy dirty here. As you know, Tailgate Ted got up on a chair like he was Julius Caesar and proclaimed that commie fans had conquered our Hard Rock Cafe, which nobody goes to. For the record, I was at the Hard Rock. It was bumping, and they did take it over. I'm back to reading. Mm-hmm. The only people who go to the Hard Rock are tourists that are visiting the convention center. Ted then went to the NFC Championship game and watched his boys lose 55-23. Then Birds fans took over his cancer fundraiser and added several thousand dollars via spite-based philanthropy, which nobody does better than Philly. There is a Hard Rock in D.C. Looks like it's on East Street, not the crappy band, but the road, only a few blocks up from the mall. We could see about reserving a room and putting together an organized Kelly Green march that will make January 6th look like amateur hour. Do you think Eagles fans will legit try to take over the draft here?
Yes.
I do too, dude.
Yes, they will try. But we don't care. Come spend your money.
Yeah. What?
And because, listen, at the draft,
there's fans
always,
from everywhere.
You always have certain people show up. Either they're going to, or we're going to have enough of our fans to say, to hell with you, we're taking up all the spots.
The draft has fans of, like, when you go work an international game, one of the things that's the most interesting is it's more of like a festival of football than it is two teams competing, because you see jerseys from, like, every era. And like, when I worked the Skins playing the Bengals in London in 2018, whenever that was, the jersey I saw most was Dan Marino. Like, So for the draft, it's more just this like festival of football, everybody's kind of hanging out and having fun. And undoubtedly, there will be Eagles fans. But like, ideally, you could just be cool. It's just the draft. It's in the game. I mean,
today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Hey, I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
And we would like to tell you a little bit about our podcast, Psychopedia.
It's true crime infused with comedy.
Making it a crimedy.
I do extensive investigative research and go deep into the darkest corners of the human psyche.
And I'm just here to lighten things up a little bit with humor, baby. You know, never at the expense of the victims, though, obviously.
Come join our family of little psychos over on Psychopedia. Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
He's a fist fight.
They don't care about that. So they're going to always try to take over. And don't let them take over. Point blank.
Yeah. I mean, this is free. So, I don't know. I thought the writing in there was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm.
But the Philly dude goes on to just, and let's be real, Philly folks have, in my opinion, a pretty unwarranted animosity towards Josh Harris. All that dude has done is spend money on players.
They need to be mad at their players that don't want to play.
Or the GM that keeps picking them.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, they got players that are super talented that refuse to play. They always are injured. That's not the owner's fault.
Here we are, Brian. How many points James Harden had in that game? Game seven? Seven.
See, James Harden has a tendency to disappear in crunch time.
Especially in the playoffs.
Yeah. And what happens with
seven
him,
points.
If he can get those calls where he just throw the ball up and act like he was fouled, he can score. But if they're not giving him that, he can't find another way.
My point to bring up Harden is, I think the two players in the NBA that are the most similar and frankly land on my players I want the least list of actual stars, of actual players with immense capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
The two dudes I want the least are James Harden and Joel Embiid.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the two dudes Philly, the Sixers built everything around.
Yeah, and one of them is still there stealing and the other one is gone somewhere else stealing.
They're mad at Harris because I guess he tried to move the building downtown and now they're going to build a new building in the South Philly sports complex, whatever they call that area.
Why be mad at him for trying to build a new building?
Here's why nobody here should care. Harris bought the team in July of 2023.
Mm-hmm.
In the time since, really, that first year, his hands were tied. It was the Ron show. He had just gotten here. You know who would have blown out everybody and had a really bad operation because there's nobody available at that time of year? Dan.
Mm-hmm.
He would have just done it to show the world he was taking over. Harris was like, all right, this is what I got. I'm going to sit back and watch and see what kind of parts I've
learn.
Got.
I'm going to learn and see what we need to do.
Since that time, hired Adam Peters. Hired Dan Quinn, drafted Jaden Daniels. The team won its first playoff game in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Made their first NFC championship game in almost 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more than 30 years.
Yeah, more.
announced a new $4 billion stadium deal. And now D.C. is going to host the NFL draft.
Yeah.
You can be mad all you want up there. Clearly, this dude is a difference maker, a
really,
culture changer.
They can, we don't care if they're mad up there. The people here are happy. And that's what matters.
Right.
And I think what you have to look at, too, people like to talk about the different sports, football rules. So the people that are mad up there are not necessarily the Sixers fan. It's the damn Eagle fan that just don't like the fact that he owns the Commanders.
I agree with that.
That's what that is.
I think the Sixers fans are mad because they were awful.
Well, they need to be mad at Joel for never showing up.
I am with you, B. I think that is some seriously misguided angst. That I don't understand at the owner. The dude refuses to play.
Can't make.
No.
I mean, the way it is, I know they can be hard on players. Show him.
So the best text I got about the draft news, I'm not going to say who it was, but it was like 2027 NFL draft. How cool is that? Washington's going to be picking 32nd.
I would love that. I would absolutely love that. Because you know what that means, people? Champion.
Landfill, how many paid gigs will B. Mitch have during the 2027 NFL draft in D.C.?
I mean, it's going to be...
Why y'all in my pocket? A bunch. Mind your business. I'd be sitting up there just hanging out with
you.
He'll have one with the team, one with the PA, one with the firefighters.
One with the league.
Yep.
Oh, funny, dog.
The draft is a 3-day extravaganza, but now they kind of set up a little radio row, so it's at least Wednesday to Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a busy week, B. Better get some sleep.
I'm good with it.
I know
no problems
you are.
Here, brother.
I know you are, sir. I can't believe, and yet I can entirely believe, Eagles fans are planning a NFL draft takeover. And you're right. You know what, DC? Have more people. Have more burgundy on the mall than green. Also, I had somebody tweet me that the widest part of the mall is right there at the Washington Monument, which makes sense because you don't have the trees and the museums right there. Like, it's much wider. But I wonder with the World War II memorials now, if that impacts the space at all. I don't know. But, dude, it's also in a lot of ways, B, if they win. I mean, sounds like it's a win, not an if. It's a little precursor for some of the big-time events you could get with a new stadium.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you got... They're talking about a Super Bowl, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, that time of year, they'd have to put... Because for those that have never been to a Super Bowl, might not be aware, there's like this huge NFL fan experience you can go to that takes up... I mean, that would be at the convention
center. That's the convention center.
Right.
Yeah. That is already there.
But you could set something up on the mall. I mean, how cool would like an ice skating rink on the mall be or something?
The NFL experience and all that stuff, it'd probably be at the convention center.
Radio Row, all that. Yeah. That'd be the easiest Radio Row we ever worked.
Not really.
Just because we'd have to get in from home?
You got
to
get there.
Yeah. That's the point.
The easiest one ever was at the Mandalay Bay.
Or maybe Arizona.
Mandalay Bay, in the house. I was able to just roll out the bed to the chair. Yeah.
All right, when we return, we're going to Philly. Dave Zangaro will join the program. Tell us what the Eagles have done in the draft. High noon in the District of Columbia. You're listening to B. Mitch and Finley on 106.7 The Fan. Nats took 2 out of 3 over the weekend from the Cincinnati Reds. Mm-hmm. And our guy Mark Zuckerman was there for all of it. Zuck, how are you, man? How's life?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good, man. How you been?
All right. We had a lot of rain in Cincinnati, and now I see that it followed me back home.
Oh, yeah. I felt bad just seeing the tweets of like the constant rain delays and games getting moved around. Still, I would say, you know, Nats took 2 out of 3. They hit pretty well in the 2 wins.
They're three games under 500, coming home with a little bit of interleague play set up over the next couple of days with Cleveland coming to town. Generally, we'll start big picture. Generally, people got to feel pretty good about what Washington's doing right now.
Yeah, I think if you can step back and look at the bigger picture, absolutely. There's some encouraging stuff going on. And let's remember, they started the year, they had a terrible opening week. They were 1-6. Mm-hmm. So since then, they're 15-13. So you're over 500 since then. And a good number of those losses are games that were lost because of the bullpen. So, you know, obviously it's an important part of the team. You can't just discount that. But if you just stabilize that a bit, and they have in the last 4 days or so, the bullpen has pitched well, I think there's potential here for this to flip a little bit. They're playing very competitive baseball, and it just boils down to a lot of these close games. Can they get that one hit they need to take the lead? Can they get the bullpen to close it out for them? The starting pitching has been very good across the board. They're beating good teams. They have a winning record against teams that are over 500. They've actually struggled some against the lesser teams for whatever reason. So there is stuff to be encouraged by. They're not there yet, obviously, but I feel like these are kind of fine-tuning things. These are little things they need to clean up. They do that, I think they're going to be in position to start winning more games than they lose.
Mark, is that something that we have to focus on? I mean, you said about the bullpen, and you've had some bullpen struggles for some time here. You know, how do they get that to a point where they know they can count on?
Well, the good news, B. Mitch, is as of last night, they no longer have the highest bullpen ERA in baseball. They've surpassed the Angels. They're now 29th instead of 30th. So there you go.
Huzzah!
Progress. No, what's happened is a few things. Kyle Finnegan had his two blown saves, but he brushed those off, came back, has been good. Jorge Lopez, an important guy they signed to be their setup man, he got off to a really bad April. He's had now five straight scoreless appearances, looks more like himself, who he was supposed to be all along. That's important. And then they did make one fairly significant switch during the road trip. They cut ties with Colin Poche, who just never could throw strikes for whatever reason. They DFA'd him, and they signed this guy, Andrew Chafin. Wait till you guys see him. He is straight out of Central Casting. He is Kenny Powers from Eastbound and Down, like in real life. And he has a track record. He's made 600 big league appearances. He's been all over the place over his career. He's only pitched one so far, but he faced two batters in a big spot the other night in Cincinnati, struck them both out. This is a guy who can help stabilize things. And so all of a sudden, it's looking a little bit better there. Again, they need to do this for more than 4 days. You got to extend this over a longer stretch. But I don't think anybody truly believed they were going to be as bad as they were in that first month. It would be hard to be, you know, have a 7 ERA as a group for a whole season. So if that just gets to be better, it doesn't have to be great, it's better, I think they start winning some of these closer games.
You know, one thing that's really helped them is, and I don't mean day-to-day, right, because there's obviously good games, bad games, but the starting pitching's been really pretty good. We're talking with our friend Mark Zuckerman, excuse me, from Massad Sports here on the Rude Guest Hotline. Zuck, I mean, Mackenzie Gore, I'm just looking at his wins above replacement. You know, now you get into May, this is like we're actually into the season. Like the results aren't maybe skewed by like one good or bad performance. Is Gore starting to have the kind of games, the type of performances? I mean, obviously the strikeout numbers are significant that everybody kind of had hoped and expected with a player of his caliber.
Yeah, I mean, he leads the league in strikeouts now, and he's doing that while also hardly walking anybody. He finally walked four guys yesterday, and three of them came in the fifth inning when it was just a downpour, and they tried to play through it. And at one point there, prior to that inning, he had a 7-1 strikeout to walk ratio for the season. So I looked this up to see, you know, has any Nats ever done that before? The only guy who's ever done it, you know, a qualified starter who pitched a full season, was Max Scherzer. Okay. Now there's a long way to go. It's a little over 1 month, so he has to show he can do this for 6 months. But that tells you just how dominant he's been so far. And while there've been, you know, a couple of those really outstanding games like opening day, to me the more impressive thing is a game like yesterday, when he's pitching well, but he's got some guys on base, and then he has to deal with that downpour in the fifth inning. He's got runners on base. He slips at one point, falls down, and he gets through it, and he ends up going five innings, giving up the one run. That, to me, is the big step that he's taken, where a year ago that might spiral out of control on him, and all of a sudden he's given up four runs instead. And now he's able to limit the damage and keep it to one. So even on the days when not everything's exactly perfect how you want it to still be that effective, I think that's what is helping him kind of develop into a true ace right now.
B, I'm old-fashioned. I still look at ERA and batting average. I know those stats are lame now, but I still look at those. In eight starts, Gore is averaging 13 strikeouts per nine. Now, he's not always getting to nine, mm-hmm. depending on how long how long he goes. And his ERA is 3.3. Zuck, I'll be honest with you. I am more encouraged by Gore than I expected to be. Last year, I thought it was pretty up and down, and I wondered if he would deliver on the hype that had surrounded him. And this year's the first month of the season, 6 weeks, whatever it is, has been so encouraging, I think.
Yeah, no, he has taken that next step. And he's always been touted as the potential ace. But as you said, inconsistency was a huge part of that, that the reason that he hadn't got there yet. And so that's what I'm talking about, these nights, you're not going to have everything working for you every time you take the ball. It'd be great if you can, but you're not always going to have that. So what do you do with those starts when you're not at 100% or the conditions aren't 100%? Can you find a way to still be successful? That's what makes the great ones great. And so far, he's been able to do that, and that allows him to have those numbers you're talking about. And, I mean, again, long way to go, but right now, when you consider what Gore has done, what James Wood is doing, what C.J. Abrams is doing.
Yeah.
That trade's looking okay at the moment, huh?
Well, dude, when do we start to have a real conversation about Jake Irvin and Mitchell Parker? B and I proclaimed Mitchell Parker our guy last year, so we're just kind of riding with him at this point. Yeah. But, like, these dudes are now, over a big period of time, showing that they are legitimate major league starters and maybe, in Parker's case, maybe more.
So they both, I think their biggest strength right now is they are just bulldogs, and they're going to give you six and even seven innings at times and take the ball every fifth day and give you a chance to win. And that's an important thing to have. They may not be number one starters, anything like
that. Right.
But they're guys you have to have in a good rotation, the innings eaters, the workhorses, bulldogs, whatever you want to call that. Now, Parker was great for the first month, and then his last two starts, all of a sudden he's starting to walk guys, and that has been – the number one thing he's avoided since coming up last year. He was pretty down on himself the other night for struggling with that. They're trying to work on some things, figure out what the issue is. I think it's mechanical more than anything else. So he does need to clean that up. But if he can, he is showing that he is a guy who's going to give you a chance. Not always going to be, you know, dazzle you, but you're going to look up at the end of the night and say, man, he went six innings and gave up two or three runs, gave us a chance to win. That's important stuff to have, you know, behind a number one. You need those middle of the rotation guys who can do that.
And as this thing continues, I mean, we talk about the pitching and the bullpen. I'm sorry, B. I try to play it cool, but eventually I just want to get to James Wood.
James Wood, yes, but I mean, he's doing great. But I'm saying Dylan Cruz, what is going on with Dylan?
There we go.
That one hasn't gone as well as you would hope. Yeah, so far.
You don't think it's a problem, though.
Well, he is still kind of swinging at a lot of stuff, a lot of slop. Mm-hmm. Their teams have figured out, you know, they don't throw him a lot of fastballs. He chases pitches out of the zone. So there is that, and that's something he's going to have to figure out. He just went through two slumps. It was 0 for 23 on the road trip. He finally got the hit yesterday, and it was 0 for 22 on the season with runners in scoring position, and he snapped that one with that same hit. So maybe that's a little something to get him going. Yeah, he's still got to figure this out. And I think what everyone keeps cautioning here is he was rushed through the minor leagues. He made it to the big leagues within a year. Mm-hmm. He still has very little overall professional experience. And I know we've been spoiled here by so many prospects over the years who've come up and been gangbusters right away. It doesn't always work that way. It usually doesn't work that way. I think the good news is they're giving him time to figure it out. I don't think they're putting pressure on him. The other thing that I think that stands out about him that's important to note, and I think bodes well in the long run, no matter what he's doing at the plate, he's played outstanding defense, and he runs the bases really well too. And I think that's important to note because, especially for a young player, you can take your troubles from one part of your game to the other part of your game, And he's done a really nice job of separating those things. And I think that shows the, you know, just maturity and overall, you know, quality of player that they think he's going to be, is that he's not going to let his offensive struggles affect, you know, the other parts of his game.
Okay.
Is it a, with Cruz, because early on it's early, man, he'll get there. Now we're 6 weeks in, and it seemed like there was like a little bit of a bright spot there, and then there were these slumps again. Is there any sort of timeline where like people get worried, or is it not even this year?
No, I think if he were to do this all year, then you do have some concerns, of course. And would they let him go the whole season, you know, batting under 200 and struggling like that with runners in scoring position? Maybe not. At some point, they would maybe say, okay, it's time to take a break, send him down and work on things. But I don't think they're there yet, obviously. And because you do see glimpses of it that tell you, okay, he does have this ability, clearly. I mean, there's a reason he was so highly touted. You don't just get that kind of reputation and be picked that high in the draft without obviously having the ability and everything else. He probably just needs to settle down a little bit. I'm sure he's feeling it himself. He's an intense competitor. I'm sure he's never struggled to this extent anywhere that he's ever played in his life. And so I think that part of it is maybe even a bigger challenge for him. Just like calm down, trust your instincts, trust your natural abilities. You're going to start to figure this out and you'll be okay. But yeah, there is a point where you do start to worry more. I don't think they're there yet, but it's not an endless rope where they would say, okay, you're going to play all season no matter how it goes.
For sure. How about CJ? Because he's playing really well, and I think
they got a little young nucleus there, man.
Dude, what I think we're all trying to figure out is they're playing pretty good. Davey deserves a lot of credit because they kind of tend to start slow and then start playing really well, and we're seeing that again. Zuck, I'll be honest, just as an outsider that wasn't, I don't know, you know, the ins and outs of day-to-day life in the clubhouse. But when CJ got in trouble in Chicago and was at the casino at 8 a.m. and there was a game at 1 that afternoon, and I think they kind of gave him some time off, how important is it that he has started well this year and it seems like there's none of that type of stuff popping up?
Yeah, no, that was huge. And you know, honestly, all off season, I kept thinking this is the number one storyline with the team. Is he going to come back and be the guy he was supposed to be? And just talking about him as a player, like forget about any off the field stuff, but is he going to respond to this whole thing well, come back and play well like he did the first half of last year when he was an all-star? And the answer is yes, he absolutely has. He addressed the issue in spring training. He's done everything right since then. And most importantly, he's come out and played really well for them, and he's on a 10-game hitting streak right now. It's obviously James Woods, their best hitter, but it does feel like when C.J. Abrams is going well, the team goes well. There's something to that. I think it's the reason he bats leadoff for them. You look up his numbers in their wins versus losses or when he was out for a little bit on the IL a little while ago. I think there's a real correlation there that when he's going well, this team goes well. And I do see a more mature, just kind of focused kid who wants to be the player that we saw he was last year in the first half, which is, you know, an all-star, a truly all-around great shortstop in this game. And I think he knows he can be that if he keeps his head on right and, you know, and works at his game and fine-tunes everything.
Well, to that point, what you said earlier about the trade, so of their position players, Abrams and Wood have the highest wins above replacement of everybody. And then of their pitchers, Gore has the highest wins above replacement of everybody. So there definitely are some young pieces there. Are Davey and Rizzo, how's everybody getting along? Like, is anybody frustrated? Do they feel pretty good? Just the overall vibe with them coming back home now. They got the day game on Wednesday. Like, you know, you're far enough into the grind of the season that if there are any chafing or anything, like it would start to show, right?
Sure. And I think, you know, that first month when you've got the bullpen losing games the way they were, that can lead to some bad stuff, of course. And to their credit, I didn't see any signs of that. And it reminds me of 2019 when obviously that star-studded team was losing games early because of the bullpen, and it could have fractured the clubhouse, and it did not. and it wound up in, you know, glorious fashion in the end. And I think that is a credit to the manager, who has done such a good job over the years of keeping everybody together and just focusing on, hey, go 1-0 today and don't worry about any of the other stuff. So there is that. And, you know, they opened that road trip with a crazy game in Philadelphia. They rallied from behind to take the lead, and then Finnegan blew it in the bottom of the ninth. And the mood in the clubhouse that night was about as down as I've seen it in a long time. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean it in a good way, because that told me that this team now believes that it should be winning these kind of games. That it's not enough to say, hey, we battled back and, you know, good for us. Like, no, they were in a position to beat a good team on the road. They didn't, and they felt really bad about that. I think you're going to see more of that kind of stuff now. The expectation level has been raised within the clubhouse for sure. They believe they're ready to start winning more games than they lose, and they're slowly creeping towards that mark. But when they do lose a game, it affects them, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I talked to C.J. Abrams at the red carpet homecoming event. I forget exactly what it's called, but I think you know what I mean, like before opening day. And he said, he's like, yeah, you know, we've heard for a long time that the Nationals are coming. Like, we like to think now that now we're here. And I think when you have young guys with that kind of mindset, that's at least how you want an organization to develop. Now, obviously, there's other factors, but I don't know. It's been fun watching the Curly W's. Mark, we always
appreciate you, Mark.
Appreciate you making time with us, man.
You got it. Take care, guys.
Bye, buddy.
Mark Zuckerman. Give him a follow at Mark Zuckerman. He is not the dude that started Facebook. Less than an hour from now, seriously, less than an hour from now, we're supposed to get an official NFL draft announcement from the president, the mayor, and the Commander's owner. And it's going to be nuts. I can't wait. We're going to open the phone lines after that. We are going to give away Caps tickets in about 30 minutes. I know why. Why, man? Sing it, Jeff. Long but quick, the Jeff Walker story.
Scotty singing that.
Scotty's just butt crazy.
Scotty thing, the wild card. Scotty Jeff story. Have a chance in hell of being within 48 strokes of you and I. They're crazy.
They're crazy. This morning, let's back up a little. Much has been said and discussed about the proposal to rebuild RFK Stadium and to get a NFL stadium there. The Commanders moving in.
Mm-hmm.
I think a number of things make this version of this discussion much different than previous times. The absolute top of the list, ownership change.
Why?
The new owners are, by all accounts, stand-up people, right? Like, and they do things the right way. And they have deep pockets and a lot of connections. This is a different world. Two, the team's good all of a sudden. I think Jaden Daniels is a factor in this.
It makes a world of difference.
But beyond that, a huge part of this is that the owners are putting up a boatload of cash. Yeah. They're putting up somewhere between $2.5 and $3 billion. Okay, that to me changes things. It is not like the phrase "put your money where your mouth is." They're doing it, and so there was a lot of excitement the first day. The announcement at the press club with Mayor Bowser and Josh Harris and Roger Goodell. And then, inevitably, there are questions, opposition, pushback. What I find fascinating is there has been discussion that folks that don't live in the city shouldn't weigh in on this, which I think is kind of silly. But what the Post did, and I applaud them for doing this, is they did a survey of D.C. residents,
mm-hmm.
how they feel about using city money to pay for a new Commander stadium. And the results, to me, are pretty darn significant. 55% of D.C. residents favor it. 55% of D.C. residents favor it.
I kind of, this is one thing that I have a problem with, the way that question was stated anyway. 55%, you got the majority, yes. But they're not building the stadium. See, that's the difference. That money is being used for infrastructure, which is going to have to be built whether the stadium is there or not. Am I right?
Yeah. Maybe not to that level, but
yes. The team comes in with $2.7 billion. You know, and that, if that's all theirs or the league put in some, whatever. But you're going to have to spend $500 to $750 million anyway, whether a stadium is there or not. But I think that a lot of people who like to sit up here and tell us stuff, politicians, they may not even much talk to their constituents.
I find that very interesting you say that, B. Just so we're clear, this is a Washington Post Char poll. This is a legitimately well-run, well-done poll. It's a random sampling of 651 adult residents of D.C. And the poll was conducted from April 22nd to May 4th. So last time I put out poll data, I had critics say, oh, well, you know, where did that poll come from, right? Like, this one is from the Post. This is not from the mayor's office or an opposition office. This is what should be an unbiased poll. What I find far more interesting, and honestly, this conversation has gone on my entire life. As someone who has lived here and lived in Northeast for a decade, like, it's not that hard to see where portions of the city are really developed and where they aren't.
Uh-huh.
And development over the course of my life has certainly spread eastward in the city. Cap One Arena started it, Nats Park, Audi Field, The Wharf. Residents of Ward 7 and 8, so the stadium will be built in Ward 7, 8's just across the river, where there is a true lack of development, stunted development.
Yeah.
Residents of Ward 7 and 8 support public money for the infrastructure to build a new stadium, 63%.
Mm.
Those east of the Anacostia River polled, 74% support. It's almost like the people that live in the areas that haven't gotten development are like, hell yeah, we want this development, this gigantic project.
Then we wouldn't have to drive so far to get to stuff.
I also find this pretty interesting. Of black residents polled, 62% support. White, it's 53%, so it's still a majority. The only wards where you don't have a majority supporting are 3 and 4. This to me, and what is really imperative to consider, and this is from the Post. This is like, I know this, and I've said this, but people question it because I'm getting my data from the presentation, which the mayor and the NFL and the Commanders were a part of. So if you want to be skeptical of that, you can be. I understand. This is from the Washington Post. They are reporting this. I'm sure they have checked this out to be true. Otherwise, it wouldn't be here, right? Democracy dies in darkness. This is what the mayor said, and this is what the Post is writing today. Under the terms unveiled last week, the district would help fund stadium infrastructure, parking facilities, and recreation improvements. The largest chunk of its contribution, $500 million, would come from the sports facilities fee, formerly the ballpark fee, a tax on businesses earning $5 million or more. Let's be clear. That money is only paid by a handful of businesses in this town.
Mm-hmm.
Further, that money already was earmarked to build Nats Park, which has more than exponentially repaid the public investment.
Totally.
And they're not taking this money. It's not like, yo, we're taking the money from the schools and we're building roads for the stadium. This is going from Nats Park to RFK Stadium. $500 million. D.C. would also invest $200 million for utilities infrastructure, roadways, and a metro transit study. Well, guess what, folks? That $200 mil, you'd have to spend it anyway. Whatever you're putting in there.
Mm-hmm.
You tell me what you don't have to spend, B. If you're going to develop a 180-acre site.
You're going to have to spend.
Utilities infrastructure? You have to spend on that?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Roadways? Right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a metro transit study?
Definitely.
Yeah. As an aside, before WMATA wades into this and inevitably the price tag goes up, those metro stops supported NFL games and big concerts for, what, 30 years, 25 years?
Yep.
I don't know why we're convinced they can't do them now. Maybe you got to repaint But, you know, maybe you got to do a little bit. I don't understand why people are convinced you need more Metro. Like, it's already there. It worked for years. I wrote it. I don't get that. But
so the two wards that oppose it, they're not affected by it, to be honest with you. They're way on the other side. They got everything they want. They have grocery stores right there. They have a lot of stuff, and they get better police protection over there. Why are you mad at it? Some other place getting better? Because it'll bring a little bit more oomph to the area. Why are they so bad against it?
I mean, wards 3 and 4 are probably the wealthiest in the city. I don't know, maybe 2 because that's Georgetown and stuff. I don't know those answers. What happens
is Chevy Chase, Glover Park, and Tinley Town. And then you have Shepherd Park, Fort Totten, and Brightwood.
What I have noticed in life, and I'm not making this specific to anything, is you get people, a lot of times the more educated you are, the more you want to be offended on behalf of other people. Let other people make up their minds. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, if you're, so of the money that is currently constituted in this Post story, which I think adds up to about $900 million, $500 million of it, it's from a ballpark fee that already exists. They're just renaming it to sports facilities fee. That's how they built Nats Park. $200 million is going to be for utilities, roadways, and metro. They'd have to spend that anyway.
Yeah.
And then there's another $181 million that's coming from Events DC, which is the convention and sports authority for DC. And their money is specifically built for this. That's why that.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's not a company, but that's why that entity what they exists.
Do, when people roll in town, everybody that lays in the bed or spends money, they earn their tax money from that thing right there. So it's about when you get people to come into the city, spend a little time, spend a little money, they make theirs that way. And a lot of that is from people from outside of the district. It's not from people inside the district.
I like this quote a lot. This is from Wayne Young. This is in the Washington Post story. I tweeted this out this morning. If you want to check it out, it's worth checking out. Wayne Young is a 65-year-old Ward 7 resident, is not a fan of the Commanders, but finds the proposal exciting and isn't frightened by the use of city money for the project. What frightens me is that people don't speak of the revenue it will generate. So the reality is people need a balance between the revenue spent and the revenue that it will generate. What I want to hear more is the other part to see what the balance is. The part that is not discussed is the revenue it will bring in the short term and the long term. I understand there are questions. I understand you want to get the best possible deal for the city. I understand that if you live over there, there will be periods of inconvenience due to construction.
Yeah.
You drive around the city and the surrounding suburbs.
I drive in every day. I got periods of inconvenience from where I live all the way here.
Has anybody driven through Tyson's lately? Like, I understand there are always going to be people resistant to change.
Because change sometimes make things begin to be a little bit more equal.
There's already a stadium there.
Let's be real.
What did you think was going to happen?
I go back to what you and I read in that paper. When those 100 senators voted on 100-0, and they put some things of which they would like to see a hope. And if they have a little control over some things, and they put number one with stadium, right?
First bullet point.
I think I'll keep going back to that bullet point.
When we come back, let's talk about the George Pickens trade and what that does to the NFL landscape. Nobody go anywhere. It's B. Mitch Finley.